These guys are a couple of old vets in every way. Dr. Roger Lear, The Aliens and the Scalpel, and so many more. Whitley Strieber, Communion, of course, Global Superstorm, and so many more. Both real vets at all of this. Gentlemen, welcome.
Good to be
good
with
to be
you
here, Mark.
That's great. Both of you just boom, boom, like that. Get right out of the way. All right. This story that we're about to hear apparently is in reference to a piece that Dr. Roger Lear received, purportedly being of a crash in New Mexico, possibly 1947 Roswell. Where did this come from, Dr. Lear?
Well, Art, this piece was given to me on loan originally by a friend of mine who knew that I was interested in the UFO field. And he, in many ways, was an ingenious individual. He was in the business of R&Ding engines for all the major automobile companies and aircraft companies, and he had quite a physical plant. And in the talents that he had, he was a bit of a metallurgist himself in order to do the job.
Okay, where did he say the piece came from?
Well, he told me that he acquired the piece as collateral for a loan that he had given an individual from a friend of his.
All right.
And it was his friend who told him that he got it from a New Mexico crash site. Now, we cannot pin this down to know that it's Roswell or some other crash site. You know, there's certainly three possibilities as far as we know. Now, unfortunately, his friend, before Jim had a chance to collect on the loan, was killed in Mexico in a motorcycle accident.
There's apparently a number of deaths connected with the with this.
There sure are. Jim himself has passed on, and one of the other principals in this matter, Dr. Bill Mallow, has died. Dr. Mallow, after being given a clean bill of health at a physical a few weeks later, ended up with two different forms of leukemia, the first time the oncologist had ever seen this in a single individual. And what was worse about this is that the treatments were contraindicated treatments. The two treatments fought each other. So Bill had to be treated for one form of leukemia on one day and another form on another day and finally succumbed.
So death has followed this piece sort of all around. And
indeed.
And not only death, but there's a little misfortune involved with it also, because the first scientist who did a major portion of the work on this piece, Dr. Russell Vernon Clark, was with the University of California, San Diego, and was present at a press conference that we gave at the Roswell anniversary with about 300 members of the press and TV there. Unfortunately, the word didn't get out too well because it happened to be the same day as the Mars lander landed on Mars. So we got a back seat. But unfortunately, Dr. Vernon Clark went back to California to his job after the press conference. Within a few weeks, he had no job because they had pulled the funding from the entire department, which was the Department of Environmental Science. He was out of a job, no money, couldn't seem to find another job, wound up in a severe divorce. He lost a tremendous amount of weight and has never been seen or heard from since. Although
So death and misfortune follow this. How are you feeling, Doctor?
I feel my usual self, Art.
That's good. That's good. All right, so, but you've been sort of the driving force behind trying to get this tested and in some manner identified. The early tests that were done on it came back anomalous, correct?
Yes, very anomalous.
In what way?
Well, it showed the major anomaly. The piece is 99.9% silicon. And if someone has a copy of the first or the new second edition of The Aliens and the Scalpel, there is a pie a photograph in the back of the book where the scientific material is. And normal silicone, one of the isotopes, which is SI-28, is 92%. SI-30 is around 3%, and SI-29 is about 5%. in the piece that Russell Vernon Clark and two other labs, mind you, tested.
Yes.
The SI-29 was 13%. SI-28 was 27%.
Okay, what does all that mean? Does that mean
those are
not
the silicon isotopes?
Yes. Does that mean it would not be of Earth origin? That it was so different, it would not be. Where? What does it mean?
That's exactly correct. These are what are considered non-terrestrial isotopic ratios.
Gotcha.
Now the other 0.1%, which consisted of nickel, zinc, and silver, and not only was the silicon showing non-terrestrial isotopic ratios, but each one of the other metals also was non-terrestrial.
Mm-hmm. So, at this point, you've got a hot piece on your hand. Two labs, you say?
Well, Russell Vernon Clark did it, and then he sent it to two additional labs to confirm what he did.
And they all came back with the same
All came result. Back with the same, and then we had it tested by Dr. Bill Mallow at the Southwest Laboratories, which, as Whitley will tell you, is now pretty much a closed lab to anything but military.
Okay. So they were very good, and they are now solely military. Is that right, Whit?
Right. Well, prior to, Dr. Mallow was a real adventurer. He was also one of the most powerful people at Southwest Research, having been there since 1954 and having been hired directly by Tom Slick, the founder of the lab. And Mr. Slick was an adventurer himself. He set up and went on the first scientific expedition ever to go in search of the Yeti. And he also developed something called the Mayan Science Foundation, which has degenerated into a very uninteresting organization as well. But in his time, both of these organizations were at the leading edge of their field. However, when the director who had been with Mr. Slick from the beginning and was Bill Mallow's close friend retired, the new director immediately called him in and said he wanted him to stop doing this UFO stuff. And I quote, Dr. Mallow said to me, a direct quote from him was this: our CIA client takes a dim view of your UFO interest. And
okay,
but of course it didn't stop Bill at all. All it changed was that he couldn't send us reports on official letterhead anymore. He had to write them out by hand or give them to us verbally, but we still had full access to the equipment of the lab and the more than willing help of every scientist there that we talked to and who saw the things we were bringing in and who realized that there really were anomalies being observed.
All right, so you had the real thing, because, I mean, if the isotopes, people should understand, the isotopes have to be exact, and if they're not, scientists very easily can tell you, hey, this did not come from Earth, and that's what you had on your hands, according to two labs, so what then?
Well, there were other tests that they ran. One was a test let me explain. The surface on this object, one of the surfaces had a slight curve to it, and they were able to place this on a computerized instrument and stretch out the curve until it became a full circle, and I believe that the diameter of this circle was 36 feet.
So that would have been the diameter of the object or part of the full piece, or which could have been just a piece of something.
That's correct.
Okay.
The other thing, one of the other things they measured was some kind of spectrographic analysis of the colors of the material, and they had determined that this piece had reached temperatures above 1 million degrees centigrade.
That would be the sun's temperature.
The
center of the sun. A million degrees, I believe.
So that's pretty hot. And now, physically, you could, without any laboratory, we did this many times, you could hold one end of it and dip it into just cold water, and the end that you were holding got so cold that it would actually burn your fingers. You'd have to drop it.
Really?
And the other property that it had was if you did the same with I'd say tea water, you know, about the temperature of tea, drinkable tea.
Yes.
You could dip it one end in there, and then the other end became so hot again, you couldn't hold it. You'd have to drop it.
Oh, that's a really interesting piece. No question about it.
So the colors on it, too, as I said, were very interesting. And you could see that the surface, one of the surfaces looked like it was, well, lack of a better word, it looked like it was machined. Hal Putoff, as you know, who was with NIDS for many years and is a double PhD, got very interested in the piece, and out of his own pocket, he paid to have some tests done on the piece. Unfortunately, when Bill Mallow died, his files, we don't know what happened to him, and all the material that was done at Southwest Labs was sent to Jim Fewing, who died, and so far this surviving wife has not been able to find the file. But I have.
Now, however, I almost hesitate to say this on the air.
No, go ahead.
But I have well hidden quite a bit of the material that Bill Mallow produced, of the files that he produced on these things.
Oh, you do?
Yes, I do. I don't have any intention of saying where it is. In fact, I.
That's good. With what I've heard so far tonight, I don't think I'd tell him where it is.
Well, no. You haven't heard it all yet, Art.
No, it gets much worse.
It gets worse?
Just the beginning.
Really? Okay, Doctor, by all means, continue. Where do we go with this? By now you know it's from elsewhere, so what do you do with it?
Certainly appears to be from elsewhere. Some years after the Roswell press conference, an individual who had befriended me some years ago, a former producer for CBS, decided to leave CBS and go into the production aspect of computerization. So he was working for companies setting up production. He knew about this piece and was very ambitious and extremely into the UFO field. He had done a number of very successful UFO videos. And being very innovative, he wanted to put on the first international UFO conference on the Internet.
Oh.
And he spent a lot of his own money and a lot of investors' money. There were a lot of people who were invited to speak. I believe Whitley was also one of them. He advanced sums of money to each one of the individuals that was going to speak at the conference. It would be live. People could ask questions. Well, the principal subject to sort of ground the conference, he wanted to use this piece of material. So this was right after the time that Bill Mallow had done the research on the material, and we were going to use this data and broadcast it live all over the world on the Internet.
Yes.
There was a website, which I won't mention now, but suddenly 2 days before the conference, I got a call from Chris saying there's something wrong. I can't say what it is, but go to the website.
Yes.
Well, you know, you dial in the URL, and usually if you can't get it, you get a menu that comes up, so this page is not available, or the site, whatever.
Right.
Well, you dial this URL, and the screen would go black. I mean, like night, black. No writing, no nothing. So you do it once, you figure, oh, yeah, there's something wrong with the machine. So I do it again, do it a couple of times, and the screen goes black. I didn't know what was going on. That night, I got a call from Bill Mallow, and he sounded rather upset on the phone.
Yes.
And he said, you know that piece of material that I was looking at? And I said, yes, Bill, of course I do. He said, well, I want you to know it's nothing but a piece of ordinary silicone.
Silicone?
What? It's nothing but a piece of ordinary silicone.
Now, wait a minute. This is a man who had confirmed the isotope ratios earlier.
Yes.
And all of a sudden he's saying it's nothing but ordinary silicone.
Yeah, and those exact words, it's nothing but a piece of ordinary silicone. He repeated it about 4 times. He said, I'm sorry, and hung up. There was no further conversation. The following day, I tried to get a hold of Chris, and I couldn't get a hold of him, but I got notice that the conference was canceled.
canceled.
The following day,
yes.
I finally got a hold of Chris, and he said, well, the conference was canceled because that piece of material was nothing but a piece of ordinary silicone. And he repeated it a couple of times. I thought that was rather strange. Wouldn't talk, wouldn't discuss, tell me why.
Uh-huh.
The conference was canceled until about a week later when we came down here from the Bay Area, San Francisco Bay Area. And I said, what in the world is going on?
Yes, and?
He said, I'm scared to death, Roger. I'm scared to death. He said, I don't want anything further to do with this piece or with UFOs.
Huh.
And I said, what's going on? What happened? And he said, I was at work, he said, and I had a visit from two suits. They showed me some identification, asked me to accompany them, and they took me and put me in a van and drove me around the San Francisco area for 11 hours, telling me that the piece of material was nothing but a piece of ordinary silicone. There was no website. And there is no international UFO conference.
Wow.
Now, that man today still has absolutely nothing to do with the subject of UFOs.
To this very hour.
To this very hour.
Huh.
And it doesn't end there.
Holy mackerel. Holy mackerel, there must really, really be something about this particular piece.
Absolutely. No question whatsoever. This piece is sensitive material. It's real. Something obviously is quite real about it. But, you know, you never know how they work. It may be that they concentrated on this precisely because it isn't real in order to throw us off something else that is. The trouble with this field is, it's a hall of mirrors, and you can never forget that. But right now, judging from what happened, it really does look like this is a very sensitive piece.
Well,
there was something I believe that Whitley might remember. I talked to you at one time close to after all this had happened, and you told me on the phone that you had talked to Bill, and I remember you told me something to the fact that he had been very gently leaned on.
Willie?
Bill, yeah, he had been, and he was really circumspect about this with me, because one of the things that would happen is that when Bill was having any kind of pressure put on him, we'd go to lunch at Marie Callender's near, not far from Southwest Research, and we'd have a lovely, jovial lunch during which it would become clear that he was having some sort of trouble, but he was really very, very careful about it. Bill had a high security clearance.
Yes,
he knew a lot of secrets.
Did he give you any idea of what this gentle pressure consisted of?
Yeah, I had the impression that it came from the military. It came from friends of his in the military. I don't know exactly who they were, but it was pressure that he was not interested in, basically. He just ignored it, but he wanted me to know that it was there.
Well, tied in with everything else we've already heard about this, that begins to be meaningful. You might disregard that otherwise, but already there's quite a history of death.
Oh, there's a history, all right. This object has been it's first of all, I would really think twice this time, if I was a scientist wanting to work on it, I don't think you even still have it, do you, Roger?
Oh, that's a very good question, Willie.
Well, I knew you were going to ask.
I mean, you kept talking about it in the past tense.
Yes, I have, let's say, secured it by passing it on to a chain. So basically, I don't know where it is.
So you felt it necessary by now to take that kind of precaution to get it out in the wind totally? I mean, being passed, I guess, from person to person, or what?
Yes, just being passed from person to person, and at various times I may get an inkling as to where it is and so on.
But, uh-huh.
It's a familiar technique. I'm using it also with Bill's stuff and with some other things.
All right, gentlemen, hold tight. We're here at the bottom of the hour. Hold on. No, really sounds like something right out of the X-Files, actually. All right, Dr. Lear and Whitley Strieber, both of you.
I have a little piece of breaking news. I don't want to interrupt our flow, but I do want to say this just briefly, because this just came in a few minutes ago.
Fire away.
Okay, this has happened over Langju in China, I guess about 8 hours ago, during their evening, Saturday night. And something exploded over this city. They're saying it was a UFO that exploded. Two parallel red lights went across the city, and then there was a tremendous explosion that lit up the place like daylight over a suburb. And the, you know, China has a different attitude towards UFOs. They have a semi-official UFO research group there, and the government has an entirely different approach to the thing than the U.S. government does.
In what sense?
Well, they're much more open to this, and they consider it a worthwhile area of scientific research in China.
And so one apparently has blown up over the name of the city again, please.
Langju in western China. What's interesting about this is that there have been reports from western China and a part of India recently, a lot of reports of a tremendous amount of UFO activity in the area. So it's a quite interesting story. It's just
one blowing up is really big. Where did that come from, Woodley?
It came from I'm not sure. They just put it up on my website a minute ago. Let me look and see.
All right.
It's up on unknowncountry.com. UFO appears to explode in China, and the story comes from news24.com.
Okay.
It just literally just appeared.
Yeah, I'm not familiar with that, but that's fine. That should be quite a developing story, actually. All right.
Well, I hope it will develop as a story. It's difficult sometimes to get news out of China, but we do try hard to do it. We've got some pretty good sources there for our website, so if this develops and it's found out that it was a meteor or it wasn't, I think we'll probably be able to do follow-up stories in the next few days.
Well, either that or we'll get a picture of a mid-level Chinese military guy holding up a piece of aluminum foil. Okay.
That's been done, Art.
All right. Let's get back to our story of this piece, because it wasn't over, was it? I mean, weird as
not
it's...
Not by any means.
All right. What can continue then?
Okay, that brings us up, Art, to the present time. I was approached a few months ago by a production company in the San Fernando Valley. It was pretty well known, and I don't think there's any problem on mentioning their name. It was called Cosgrove Muir Productions.
Okay.
And they're quite well known. They've been in business for some time and have been.
I know John Cosgrove perfectly well.
So anyway, they contacted me and wanted to do a story on a couple of things. One, of course, was implants, and they wanted to know if I had anything else. And I said, well, I hesitate to mention this, but there is a very interesting piece of material, and it's got quite a story to it. And perhaps I can get the wife of the deceased individual who I got it from to go on the air. And also, I did not mention that Jesse Marcel, Jr. Looked at this piece, and he was also at the press conference, and he said that this looked like a piece of material which he called Bakelite because it was dark, and he claimed that his father brought all this material in and laid it out on the kitchen floor, and this looked like a piece of the Bakelite material. And he said he had not seen it since he was 12 years old.
I interviewed him. I recall that description, actually.
So I said, well, maybe we could get him on the air, do a program. So anyway, they went for it. And they said, what we want to do is to take a piece of this material and have it tested. Would you have any objection? And I said, no, I'd be delighted, because there's no such thing as too much data.
Right.
So what they wanted was a very precise little measured piece cut off the original sample. So I took it down to a lapidary, and I had a piece cut off that was about 2 millimeters by, let's say, 6 millimeters. It was a perfect rectangle.
Okay.
And I put it in a little plastic container, and I gave it to the producer, and they took it. And, of course, they promised to give me the results, and I suggested that you could do another Sims isotopic ratio test, because production companies really don't know what to look for scientifically.
Yeah, and you already knew. Okay.
And I gave them copies of the data that I already had, which were quite voluminous and so on. So they went ahead and they shot the program, and it aired quite recently, a few weeks ago. The program was called Proof Positive.
Yes.
And they do three segments, and they have three stories on in an hour. And one at the end of the program is deemed proof positive, another proof negative, and another proof undecided. Well, they did a real nice job on the story of the piece, but when it came to the scientific aspect of it, it was proof negative.
Proof negative.
Oh, what do you know? What do you know? Oh. I don't have the piece of material that I gave to them. I don't have any reports. I don't have anything. So I decided to get in touch with them. And lo and behold, there's no answer.
What do you mean, no answer?
There's no answer at the production company. So I call and call and call and call, and over a period of weeks, I finally don't get anybody. And I had a number that I had gotten originally that I was not calling. So I called that number, and a girl answers the phone. And I said, oh, my gosh, I finally got somebody, a live person there. She laughed. Thought that was funny. I said, is there anybody there still from the production staff of Proof Positive? And she says, oh, no, no, they're all gone. They're all gone. I said, well, where are they? She says, oh, I don't have the slightest idea. But, you know, the program is done, shot, which is not unusual. And I said, well, you know, you must have other people there. I said, I haven't been able to get an answer on the phone. She says, no, there's nobody else here, only me. And I said, you mean you have no other productions going on? She says, no, 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 nothing happening, nothing going on.
Huh.
And I said, well, we have a problem. And she says, what's that? And I said, well, you know, I supplied a piece of material. She knew right away who I was, strangely, too. Just Dr. Lear. Oh, yes, hi, how are you? Anyway, I said, I lent them a piece of material to test. I said, I never got that back. I never got any of the scientific data, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And she says, oh, I'll put you in touch with this lady. And she gave me the phone number, and I called, and I didn't get an answer back for about 3 days. Finally, she called me back, and I said, you know, I told her what I was missing. And she said, okay. She says, I'll see what I can do. In the meantime, I was able to find out the name of the scientist at UCLA who did the testing on the piece.
And so you called him.
So I called him.
And?
And told him who I was, and he was very apologetic and on the defensive. And I said, look, you know, I'm not questioning your integrity or the test that you did. Your findings are what you found. And I just, you know, I find it strange that about three or four other laboratories find something else, and you found this. And he says, no, no. He says, I did the test very carefully, and et cetera. And he said, I hope you don't mind. He says, I cut the tip off the object. And I said, excuse me? He said, yes, I hope you don't mind. He says, all I did was cut the tip off the object. And I said, the tip? He says, yeah, the tip of the triangle. And I said, what triangle are you talking about? He says, oh, the piece was a triangular piece of material.
Well, you hadn't sent a triangle. You had sent a rectangle.
That's correct. Now, I said, is there any chance I can get a copy of the data? And he says, well, I'm not supposed to do this, but, you know, since you're the owner of the piece, give me your email and I'll email it to you. And I said, okay, fine. And I said, also in your email, would you please put the description as close as you can as to what you tested? So he did, and I got a very nice two-page report signed by him. And then almost the following day, as synchronicity would have it, a package arrives in the mail.
Yes.
And it's all the data that I sent and the photographs of the piece. And there's a little plastic container. And I open the container, and lo and behold, there's this little triangular piece of material, which looks like a piece of silicone, but it's not from my piece.
It's not the same piece?
Not the same piece.
And you determine that how?
Well, you can look at it grossly and see it's not the same piece.
Not even
and
close.
I tried to match it in every which way possible.
And the scientist at UCLA that did the test didn't test, or do you feel that you got back the piece he did test?
I mean, got back the piece by mistake. that he tested.
Oh, my God.
Because she told me on the telephone she was so excited because she found this piece locked away in the producer's locker.
So somebody switched the pieces and moreover, then screwed up the return.
Exactly.
And in the process, your piece is gone.
My piece is gone, and the piece they use, I have. How do you like those apples?
Well, I don't know. I don't like those apples at all, and if I were you, I would keep that piece rotating, too. I wouldn't keep it anywhere near me.
Oh, that's a shame, because it was going to go to you next.
I've had my own experience with that sort of thing. Thank you very much. And you never quite know what to do with these things. Anyway, don't send it to me. Whatever you do with it, I don't care, but God, don't send it to me. So what are you going to do?
Well, I'm hoping that somebody will come up with some ideas and that some further testing can go on at a later date offshore. And
That's very important nowadays to do testing offshore. I learned my lesson with the Elmendorf beast. We sent an adequate DNA sample to a lab here in California, and after a long and very inappropriate wait, they told us that the sample was too degraded by either radiation or high heat or light, none of which had affected the thing.
All right. So, what are you two alleging that so many of our laboratories and testing facilities in the United States are so compromised?
Well, in either that they're compromised, or, and I think in the case of this lab, they did find something unusual, and they just don't want to put their name to it for fear of being embarrassed, because scientists are in danger in the United States if they expose anything unusual, and they know it. Their careers can be jeopardized.
Yeah. Well, you know, the other thing is that so many of these laboratories are doing government work.
That's another thing. A la Southwest Research, our CIA client takes a dim view.
Yeah, that's all really strange stuff and very concerning. So you're saying you've got to take something strange, you want it tested, go offshore.
That's probably the
Absolutely.
Best thing today. And, you know, as you know, I have material all the time. Those objects which are moved surgically. I have another case now, by the way, who has a metallic object in the foot. And I'm trying to raise enough funds to do the surgery on this lady. And I just, you know, unless I get some funds, I can't continue the work. So if we have any listeners out there that want to help with this research, why, please get in touch with me. This is a really good case with a long abduction history, not only of the individual involved, but also her family. I have two very interesting cassette tapes recorded by the father, but it goes all the way through the family.
Yeah, you also have, of course, your book for $24.95. You have The Scientific Study of Alien Implants, a DVD for $24.95, video $20, right?
And right.
The Research of Dr. Roger Lear, a DVD, $20, the video $15, and a number where all this can be ordered, and this will all help out in money for further research, right?
Every dime that comes in for the from the sale of books and the videos I've done goes directly into our nonprofit organization for research. We have a 501c3 nonprofit. And also, we can film this present surgery, and if anyone is interested in getting a copy of that surgery, all they have to do is get in touch with me, and I can give out my email address.
All right, well, you've got a website, alienscalpel.com. You've got a phone number for ordering, which is area code 805-495-2613. That's 805-495-2613. The proceeds going to further research, correct?
That is correct. And if they have a credit card, they can get the book from the publisher, which is very simply info, I-N-F-O,
mm-hmm.
at Truth Seekers Network. Com.
Yeah, you know, I had a piece. I still have a piece, and I don't say where it is either. And I must tell you, I had a lot of testing done on it, and the money for it, Linda Moulton Howe and myself split the costs of getting it tested. I mean, this doesn't come from midair. You've got a piece like this, you've got to yank the money out of your own pocket to get the testing done, and it's not cheap.
Exactly, and that's exactly what I've been doing since I started doing this until I my finances are not so good this morning.
Yes, well, there
up,
you are.
They're kind of bad.
Yeah, there you are. So that's the way it's done, folks, and you can help out by ordering some of this material and understand more as well. Anything else on the explosion in China, Woodley?
Not yet, no. It'll be a few days before we get more, because we have to go directly to the Chinese news sources, and there are language issues and so on and so forth.
How do you think the Chinese government will handle this if they really do have something on their hands, as opposed to the way we and others have?
Oh, I don't think that they'll hide it. I think if they get debris that's part of a UFO, they will announce it to the public. No question in my mind about it. If that were to happen there, it would be a much more open and a much different approach than we would have in the United States.
Well, that's pretty sad. I mean, we are the democracy with the First Amendment and all of that. They are the communist state. They're still very, very communist, actually, and so to say that, well, if it happens to the Chinese, they'll just show the world. I don't know, there's something wrong with that picture.
I mean, look at what's happening in China. China is a booming, forward-looking economy. It's immensely aggressive and immensely competent. Like when Roger was talking about laboratories, I was thinking to myself that there's better equipment available to us in China at far less expensive, less cost, and with a virtual guarantee of honest results from labs in China, in Shanghai in particular.
Right, but still, Whitley, all in all, there is something
sad.
Wrong.
I'm not saying it's not sad, Art, but I'm just saying it's the truth.
Well,
there's a tremendous entanglement in China of U.S. money and growth. And, of course, the products we're buying from China are huge, extreme amounts. But I recall Dr. Sun Chin Li, who was in UFO research in China. You remember him, Whitley?
Yes.
Yeah, he might be the right person to get a hold of. I remember some years ago he was jailed for doing this kind of work, but they let him go, and he's
bird. All is not right in China. All right, gentlemen, that's it. We're out of time. Thank you both very much, and Dr. Lear, stay healthy.
Will do, Art. Thank you.
Whitley, talk to you, I'm sure, with Ann next week.
Next week with Ann, that's right.
See you later.
Bye-bye.
Take care. You too.